Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
I'm Sophia.
And I'm Scott, and welcome to Witches Betwixt.
Today we're going to be teaching you all how to juggle. We're going to teach you all. No, I'm just kidding. We're all going to be talking about the three-ring circus that is life, and how to manage all of the different aspects of it that kind of just come at you. And something that I've found, maybe just with the people I know, or maybe just with queer people or witches in general, we tend to be very busy. Whether it's with organizations that we work with, or just with our friends, or gaming groups, whatever it is, like our social calendars, so to speak, social and also work calendars, whatever it may be, but our calendars seem to fill up quickly. And sometimes that doesn't leave a lot of room for ourselves, and it can be very overwhelming if it gets out of hand. And I guess I can kind of start kind of talking about this. I know normally I ask one of the other two, but I kind of have some ideas at the forefront of my mind, especially because today in particular, this topic is very poignant to me. So my job is like an office job. So we're in a bit of like a slow peak, like a slow season right now. So I work, but like sometimes I don't have to, I'm not like constantly clacking away at the keyboard like really hardcore trying to play catch up. I'm actually caught up on my work and maybe even a little bit like ahead. So that's a good feeling. But so because, I'm ahead, I was like, okay, you know what? It's time to blow the dust off of Pagan Pride stuff and start getting the permit done, and just start doing like some of the legwork for getting the organization together. And it just quickly spiraled out of control today because my coworker was out, and so I was covering her files, and then I was calling back and forth between the Parks and Rec department because I fucked up something on the application and almost like cost us thousands of dollars because I'm dumb and it was just a bad move. So I was just freaking out today. And then combined with I'm on this new med for my diabetes and it's given me like nausea like off and on. So I just was not feeling good from all angles, and I really just felt ready to throw in the towel by like 1 o'clock today. And my day starts, like I wake up around 7 and my work day starts around 9. So it was just a lot, and I handled it. I handled it. I fixed the issue with Parks and Rec, and I was able to catch up to myself with work, but it was really hard, and I haven't, and I always do projects and stuff like that, but today was particularly hard, I think, because I physically wasn't feeling well, and I'm used to usually having at least my physical body feeling like somewhat okay, and I realized how much it really puts me, like, it really puts you behind the eight ball when your body isn't cooperating with you. I'm used to my mind not cooperating with me, just like spacing out or anxiety or things like that. But to have my body just be like, no, we want to stop everything and we want to close our eyes and we want to go lay down. That's all we want to do. It was hard to get through that. But I did, because, and the way I did it, I just kept focusing on the big picture. I kept focusing on the fact that, like, I'm only here for a couple hours. Like, I'm only here for a couple hours. I just have to get through the next couple hours and then I'll be fine. And then I realized, like, we're recording later. And I was like, we're gonna record later. It's gonna be fine. You're tired, but it's fine. And maybe that's a bit of a pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality, but it seemed to work for me in that moment today.
I mean, I get it. I really do. It's just so funny because, like, I not even funny. It's more just like for me, I almost have like this. Well, I have this almost like I feel almost a little inferior to both of you. I always feel like both of you handle yourselves in these situations much better than I do. I want to make sure that I'm being completely honest and transparent in that I don't know that I have the best, like, you know, like skill set as far as handling pressures, because in all honesty, my brain likes to tell me to run away. And unfortunately, I've made some strides. I've done some things that are different from my norm, as far as, you know, shadow working and getting help and things like that on a professional level, that helps. But it's like a continuous thing for me, in particular this topic. It almost seems to really kind of, you know, like how I handle school and currently not having a job, and how I did have, like, how I handled having a job, you know. It's really hard, honestly, at least for me. You know, I have a difficult time seeing, whenever there's pressures, I see them as one big thing. And I have a really difficult time kind of doing what you did, Jay, where you were able to kind of compartmentalize them. You were kind of like, okay, it's just this one thing. And then I got this one thing. You know, it's much easier to handle little slices instead of trying to, like, you know, shove a, not to be, you know, the big one here, but to shove the whole cake in your mouth. You know what I mean? I said, unfortunately, I have a really difficult time seeing things like that. It's kind of a work in progress. I find, I'm making small little steps, like as far as, like, eating. Like, I know that doesn't sound like a pressure, but, like, I've been having, like I think we talked about body image before, but I feel what I'm trying to get at is being mindful, is what I'm trying to say here. Being mindful of where you're at, where you're feeling in the moment, a lot like what you said, Jay, kind of reassuring yourself that in the space that you're in, you're safe, and that, you know, taking a moment to be like, you know, I'm safe, I'm here with myself, I'm focused, you know, kind of like reaffirming yourself. That's not a bad idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm not gonna lie, like, I definitely called Joyce at one point and was freaking out. I was like, I think I just fucked everything up and blah, 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 blah. And they were like, okay, but wait for the lady from Parks and Rec to call you back. You know, wait for the email. You just have to, you have to take it like 1 minute at a time. And it's good to have someone to call as like a sounding board. But I do also have, I don't necessarily have like an avoidance thing, but what I have is I have like a snowballing problem, mm-hmm. to where one thing happens and then I'm like, oh God, well then this can happen and then this could happen. And it just starts, it's like a snowball rolling down a mountain, it becomes an avalanche. So that is something that I continue to do. Sometimes I'm aware of it and I can kind of like reel myself back in and stop and kind of like reset myself. And other times, like literally like maybe 20 minutes, 15 minutes before we started recording, I was just talking to Joyce about everything. And I just started like rambling and they were like, you're snowballing. Like you need to stop. Like you need to just shut up and just reset and tackle it one thing at a time. I think it's because I want everything to be perfect. I want everything to work. I want everything to just, I want to do everything. And yet,
you're a little too type A for your own good.
Yeah. I really am. Like, I want this podcast to grow. I want my own business. I want to lose a bunch of weight. I want to get surgery. Like, I want so many things. And all of these things are possible and they are attainable, but I have to tackle them one piece at a time. And sometimes it's really hard for me to, like, kick my own ass and be like, yo, you need to calm down and pick one thing and do the one thing.
That's like the old idiom, though. How do you drink an ocean? like one mouthful at a time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One glass at a time, you know? You're not going to get through something that's very long and exhaustive by looking at the end goal all the time. You have to be, like, focused in the immediacy. And, like, Scott, you said that you, like, envy our coping habits and stuff, and I can see why you'd say that in certain situations.
Certain, well, yeah, I didn't mean that, like, absolutely, you know.
But. I know, I wanted to say, like, I do handle work stress well, but, like, not having a job fucks my world up, because, like, I'm very much used to being a robot for society, just go, 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 and, like, be that person who has to do all the things because that's my survival mechanism, because I was forced into that role at a really young age. Like, I was put in trades at 15, right around the time that, like, me and my brother were getting caught smoking weed as teenagers, right? So, like, oh, yeah, gruff old dad's gonna come in and put you in construction and straighten you out. God, you couldn't straighten me out if you tried. And, like, right. It was rough. So, like, I learned to develop that as a survival mechanism. And while I'm good at, like, functioning like a commando when shit hits the fan, if I can't find a job, I'm fucked. And I can't find one right now, and I've been fucked for a while. And, like, also, I'm not as put together as everybody thinks. I'm just really good at hiding it because I'm a Virgo.
That's it. You
see my veneer. You see my constructed image. You see me presenting the stuff that I know will not be controversial, that will not spark people's stress. Like, I told Jay about something before you jumped in the podcast, like, health related with me, that I just haven't fucking told anybody because it doesn't matter, but I know it would stress everybody out who I told it to, so I just didn't fucking talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, stuff like that, like, I don't let you see the bad sides of me because, like, that's another safety mechanism, right? Like, if you are someone who lived around people who were, like, emotionally volatile, showing yourself being upset and not coping well is like a literal recipe for having more shit happen to you. And it's like the demand to have to function as a trauma response. You know what I mean? It's not like it's a good thing. It's like I'm stutter shook into doing it, you know?
Yeah.
As a kid, I wasn't allowed to, like, I wouldn't say allowed, but expressing emotion was actually, like, really frowned upon. Like, if I was angry about something or sad or even happy, it was like, why are you so happy about that? It's just a dumb thing, or why are you mad about that? That, you know, that's dumb to be mad about that. Like, everything was stupid. Like, every emotion that I had was stupid. That's stupid. And, as a kid, it was like that. And what's really weird, like, this relationship that I have with my parents, I actually just visited them recently, at their new house in Florida, and we got along really well. And I think it's because they're retired and they don't give a shit anymore. And so I kind of have this, like, different relationship with them. But yet, so, like, when I talk, I'm like, I can't help but, like, remember, you know, that whole, like, you know, don't feel so strongly about things. You know, don't freak out about stuff, you know.
And, like, you're never going to forget all the shit that they put you through, or, like, have all those associations disappear, you know. Like, that shit lingers. It's not a one-time thing.
Yeah. Right? I can appreciate where we are now, and it is what it is. Like, I'm just, like, focusing on the present and our current relationship, and it's really good. I actually had a moment with my mom. There was only, like, a couple pictures in the house, like, around the house of, like, me and my sister as kids. And she was like, I had a lot more pictures out, but I put them away because I didn't know if they would upset you. And I was like, wow, that is, like, some fucking thought right there, you know, like, that is, like, thoughtful fucking moment. And I did tell her, I was like, they don't upset me, like, you can put them out, it's fine, like, it is what it is. I mean, I just thought that was really nice and insightful of her to have that. So I kind of like where I am at with my parents now, but I'm not exactly fond of, I guess, how emotions and, like, stress things were, like, how I was taught or told rather to handle them, because they told me to handle stress in a really almost like in a way of like you just ignore it. Like one of my mom's famous lines is like, "Mom, I have anxiety." She's like, "Well, just stop, stop feeling anxious.
Just stop having anxiety.
Just turn that off.
Your feelings and just chuck them the fuck out the window. But you don't need them. Let me tell you, it's better if you live as an emotionless husk because that's." What we're fucking all about, baby.
Yeah, like first day of school, you know, put your feelings in your pencil box, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
my God.
Oh yeah. But so I will say that I think on a surface level, like I can definitely handle multiple fucking things. I can handle work stress and life stress and relationship stress and money stress. Like I can handle those things to a point. And I think it's important to note that everyone has their breaking point. Mm-hmm. Whether that is just being like, yo, I give up and I'm going to binge watch like Yu-Gi-Oh for 2 weeks, you know, like that's their breaking point. That's their breaking point at me.
You've gone to the Shadow Realm.
Yes, like if you banish yourself to the Shadow Realm, that's how it do. But I think it's important to know that everyone does have their breaking point, and everyone's going to handle that a lot differently. Some people are like crazy, and they'll be like, "I'm gonna, you know, take my life savings and go to Mexico," and it's like, "Oh, okay, you do you, I guess."
My partner, I just start doing drugs.
Yeah, some people have.
Some people change their hair color. They cut their hair and do something crazy with their hair.
Now, mm-hmm. I say doing drugs, but I just smoke a lot of weed. And that's, like, legal in Canada. So I'm technically not even breaking the law talking about it.
That is very true.
I don't even know if I have, like... I'm, like, over here trying to think of a time where I was even remotely, like, taught how to handle multiple pressures. Like, I can't even multitask. Like, multitasking for me is, like, I can shine if you're, like, focus on this one thing, and I will, like, if like at work or something. If someone said to me, focus on this single thing, and I will come get you to do another thing after. And if I did that, I shined, and I did great. But as soon as somebody was like, I need you to do this, but at the same time, I need you to make sure you're paying attention to the front end, I need you to make sure you're doing this... And all of a sudden, I'm like, I start to crumble, and I can't do it anymore. You know, so, like, I have a hard time even multitasking. And I mean, like, granted, of course, I know that, like, for me, it's, like, just these maladapted behavioral stuffs that come from trauma or whatever. But, you know, I also wonder, too, if maybe there are just some people that, you know, we're just meant for different things. Like, you know how, like, animals have different roles to play in the wilderness? You know, like, they have different effects on the natural world. Maybe that's the same thing for people, you know, because we're a part of that. You know, we're just as much animal as any other animal, you know?
Everybody's got their D&D class. No, I'm kidding. We talked about that.
It's true, though. It is true.
It is true. Like, I had a conversation with this about someone who I used to be really good friends with, and she was struggling to, like... understand her role in life, and she was like trying to take on way more than she should, and like was trying to do like activism, which was like super draining to her. And like I asked her what she really likes, and she really liked caring for people, right? And I'm like, well, sounds to me like you're a support class. And she's like, wait, what do you mean? And I'm like, some people are literally built to go have that fight. You know, like I referenced one of our friends and I said, she is built to tear down bigots. This girl that we know, she's like the warrior, you know, she's like the one who runs in and fucks up those people who need to be fucked up, right? But that drains her and she takes hits doing that. And you coming in with the care, whether it's feeding her, helping her with her laundry, you help heal her. are. Your purpose is, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, this great extravagant thing. You don't have to play all the roles. You just need to know what really you're good at and what makes you happy, and do that and help other people. And that's like part of the dog shit thing about capitalism, right? We're all forced to do whatever it is immediately in front of us to survive. And if we had a system where we didn't have to do that, we could all do what we're good at. And if you were to take all the people in the world right now and let them do what they're good at, I guarantee you the world would be a much more efficient and better place, instead of forcing people into servile roles and treating them like they don't actually have the competency to bring value to the world otherwise, which is a total fucking toxic mindset, right? And like, why we have to balance so many pressures really does come down to like colonial capitalistic views in their core, right? Because it tells us that our value as human beings come from our productivity, and either you need to hyper focus or you need to be able to do a whole bunch of shit to be able to be held as valuable to capitalism. But you're still not valuable so much as you generate value while maintaining a constant sense of disposability, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're never going to be caught by the system when you're falling through the gaps. It's like your peers, it's your friends, it's your network, it's your people who will catch you. But the system is designed to break us, you know? And I think that like all of this comes down to like how to survive capitalism is really the core question of how do we deal with multiple pressures, because that's what it is in its essence, right? Like, I'll tell you this, if all of us had $100,000 a year and housing, how pressured would you be?
It's true. It's
really true, though. Like, if you had that, I know what all of us would be doing right now. I'd be working on my art. We'd be working on getting healthy. We'd be working on the podcast. We'd be generating content that actually helps people. If we had our needs provided for in a base living structure, which we can do in society if we reallocate wealth, then we'd literally have all of the problems go away. But what we do to cope, they're all just responses and survival mechanisms that we've adapted in this killer be killed jungle of capitalism. To quote the person who made the movie Parasite, we all live in the same country.
Which I saw, by the way, and was an amazing fucking movie.
I'm going to see it this Saturday with a friend, so please, dear God, don't spoil it for me.
No, I don't do spoilers, but it is an amazing fucking movie. That's my review. We'll discuss later after you see it.
There's even a lot of science that supports precisely what you're saying, Sophia. There's a lot of psychologists talking right now about how a lot of the reason why, because people like to talk about how the millennial and Gen whatever's, both of our generations are showing an alarming increase in mental health complications. And a lot of people and a lot of scientists and sociologists agree that it's actually in large part due to the capitalistic structure of, the world, pretty much. Not all over the world, but, you know, many parts, in particular the United States. And, it's a big problem. You know, even the healthcare, you know, science part of the world is taking notice.
I actually had a discussion with my sister recently about this very topic, and it kind of blew my mind, because we were raised pretty much the same way, you know what I mean? Raised in the same family, and yet we are pretty different people. We are almost opposite. So my sister is queer. She is a queer woman. She is engaged to a woman. But she is, I would say, more conservative than I am. Like, I tend to take sometimes a middle stance, because I do like to hear both sides of an argument, and then I kind of come up with, you know, my own kind of stance that might take aspects of either side of the argument. But I would say she leans much more, like, really, really conservative than I do, which I find interesting for her being a queer woman. So she's really into politics, and she is fascinated with the Netherlands and their culture, and, you know, like how everyone's kind of taken care of, You know what I mean? Like you're it's that idea of your basic needs are met, and that allows you to do other things and pursue your passions and things that you like to do. Right. It takes away some of those pressures. And yet at the same time, she's not a huge fan of Bernie Sanders. And I cannot figure out why.
Bias. Okay, look, I can lay it out, but that's also because, like, I listen to more American politics than most Americans do. And it's, like, really easy if you're following mainstream media to have the hate on for Bernie Sanders, because they have been running nonstop fucking biased attacks on him for just the entirety of his existence in politics. And if you look at the videos of what he advocates for and actually just, like, cut out all the outside arguments and look at the facts, he's always come out for people of color, for women. He's anti-war. He's pro-healthcare. He's a social democrat. He's not even a fucking communist or any of that Red Scare bullshit. Nah. And, like, he's essentially running on the whole People's Party model that Martin Luther King was talking about, you know, where you make a coalition of the working class. That's why his motto is not me, us, because that's what he's running on, right? And that's why corporate media is fucking shitting bricks, because there's a lot of money tied up in the American healthcare system. It's a multi-billion, if not trillion-dollar industry. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a lot of fucking money. Y'all spend more money than any other developed world to have healthcare, and you have worse than all of us, you know? Yes. It's because your corporations have literally been sucking fucking dry for eons, and anybody who comes up to oppose the status quo and speaks to power is going to be assailed. They're going to have mud slung at them. They will be feathered and dragged through the streets if they can, you know. Well, and
the thing that
hasn't happened fully to Bernie, and he's like not dead in the water, and he's like rising, and he's gonna be the front runner now. Sorry, go ahead.
But I was saying in the conversation with my sister, I couldn't figure out for the life of me. So she likes, like I said, like some of these European countries and how, like, you know, your basic needs are met and everything. And I was talking to her, and I was like, you know, I really can't stand the 9-to-5 grind. I can't stand working for someone and making that person more money. I'm like, I really just want to have my own thing that supports me and allows me to have my basic needs met. And, you know, pursue things that I may be interested in. I'm not saying I want, I don't, if all of my wants were fulfilled, you know, like, then I'd be super massively rich. And I don't know if I necessarily want that. I think it's important to still have things that you want. But it's really important for me to have my needs fulfilled. So she said to me, she's like, well, you know, Bernie supports the 9-to-5 kind of, you know, middle class American workforce existence. And she was saying, you know, Bernie supports a society in which people's jobs pay for their basic things and they have some money left over for, you know, a couple pleasure things. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, what's wrong with that? And she was like, well, you're saying that, you know, you don't like the 9-to-5 life. I'm like, yeah, but that's me personally. Like, you have to have, like, there has to be people, like, I would say that most people would be content. Most people would be content with, oh, my job pays enough and I don't have to worry and, like, stress, and I don't have to stress about, you know, healthcare. I don't have to stress about my kids going to school. Like, I don't have to stress about these things. Oh, okay, cool. Let's take a little vacation to Florida. That sounds like fun. Let's go to Disney. You know, like, most people, I truly believe in my heart, would be content with that. Me, I'm a little different. I have a very entrepreneurial spirit, but it takes all kinds of people to be in society. Like, without entrepreneurial people, we wouldn't have businesses. We wouldn't have Disney World. We wouldn't have, like, stores. You know what I mean? Like, it takes someone with a certain different vision to have these things. And I'm like, that's what makes society go. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not, just because I have an entrepreneurial spirit doesn't mean that I'm anti-Bernie. I support that idea that people shouldn't have to stress about basic needs. It shouldn't be that way. Like, a basic need, like, housing should be a right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know what I mean? Housing is a human fucking right.
Yeah, I mean, like, they always teach, like, I remember in biology class, like early biology class, early science class, like, what are the three things to sustain human life, you know? Food,
shelter, and water.
Yeah, food, shelter.
Water and cleanliness, yeah.
Water, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, the basic things. Those things should be rights. They should not be things that you get through power, money, and privilege. Mm-hmm. You know?
That's how you control people.
Right, I just think it's fucked up. It's yeah, of just course. Really fucked up.
In other words, today's episode has been a Trojan horse critique on capitalism.
I know, I was going to say, plot twist, this is about capitalism. We just didn't know it.
I love it, like, though.
I think it's revealing.
Yeah. And we're talking about, like, what causes the pressures. We're also going to talk about, like, how to deal with it, like some magical tricks you can do. Like, it isn't like the entire episode's going to be centered around capitalism, but it would be disingenuous of us if we didn't say this, you know? Like, you really got to acknowledge what the real root of the cause is and not just, like, keep putting band-aids on broken legs.
Yeah, because people will be like, oh, my job, my insurance company, my doctor. You know, it's like, okay, well, all of these things can be linked back to one broken system that isn't helping anyone. And, you know, I think about that, too. Like, sometimes I make these offhand comments of, like, you know, oh, everyone has anxiety. You know, everyone's got a mental health issue. And, and sometimes, you know, and older people would be like, yeah, you know, you're all so soft and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, but you probably have them too. You probably have the same anxieties that I do. Maybe a little different about certain things, but you have anxiety. I'm
pretty sure they have more neuroses.
Yeah, it's just like, you know what I mean? It's like, you, like, we're the same. Actually, you're just more of a dick about it.
You know, like, believing that you're different than the younger generation is probably the most classic human thing that you could do. It's been a theme for as long as humans have been humans. So
a very long time.
Good on you for being the most tropiest trope of every trope that was ever a trope.
I do it too, though. Like, I'm actually finding myself doing that.
I make a little sure to bit. Myself and not do it.
Yes, like, it's more of like a mental thing. Like, I guess a little bit's like my environment. So the neighborhood that I live in, 10, 15 years ago, it was a very nice neighborhood. Now, not so much.
Oh, it's, dude, you sound like an old white guy right now.
I know. But it's true, though. Crime has gone up. There's a lot more abandoned houses. You know, you can kind of, you can see the neighborhood deteriorating. Like, you can see it happening. The housing, like, the values of the homes are going down while they're going up in other places. So there's a neighborhood shift that's happening.
That's fucking everywhere, though. That's not like a rich white fucking neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Like, I guess. Every place I don't is getting know. Matched right. I don't know, because in Philly right now, and I think maybe other places too, but particularly in Philadelphia, like, our neighborhoods that used to be the quote-unquote the hood are now, like, really are transitioning into, like, super expensive neighborhoods.
We have a really bad gentrification problem in Philly.
Yeah, it's really bad. Like, they're building really super bougie expensive condos next to an abandoned house. And people are buying them without blinking an eye.
See, so it's Vancouver weird. And Toronto, they'll just buy all the abandoned houses and smash them out for the condos.
Well, yeah, I mean, they do that here too, but I'm saying, you know, like, if they, you know, they smash down one abandoned house, put up the condos, but, you know, they couldn't afford the lot next to it. So it's just, it's really, you kind of have to see it to, like, but I you get the gist of gentrification and what it is, but that's, like, some of the issue right now that we're experiencing in Philly. And the thing is those neighborhoods that those people are getting priced out of their homes, they're they're coming, I don't know, they're coming into different neighborhoods. And it's just a whole shift. There's a swing. There's a swing happening. Neighborhoods that were bad are now good, and neighborhoods that were good are becoming bad. But I do find myself sometimes, like, I don't know what it is. Like, I see, like, younger kids, like, maybe, I don't know, teenage years, like, low, like, young teenage years. And they're just, like, I don't remember being a kid that was loud and obnoxious and would, like, purposely just, I never, like, purposely, like, damaged people's property and.
Kids were always like that of every year, of every
yeah.
age.
Yeah, I was going to say. Like,
we were fucking louder and more annoying than we ever thought we were, I promise.
I'm sure I was, but I was never the kid that would damage people's property, though. No, like, I wouldn't commit crimes.
But there's kids like that of every generation, too, and those kids are always dealing with problems at home. Yeah. I've never met a kid who, like, did fucked up shit who didn't have fucked up shit going on, right?
Right. Yeah, I think the problem, I think what it is I'm comparing it to me and my friends. Like, I'm comparing these kids to me and my friends, and I'm like, but these kids they're not like me and my friends. We had a different experience, you know? Yeah,
but that's, I understand that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but sometimes, like, I catch myself sometimes, like, me and Joyce will be, like, you know, just, like, watch a TV or something. I feel like we're, like, an old couple. We're, like, our kids these days, and I remember.
I mean, that's literally what old couples do, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, we gotta do something. We gotta get out of here. Do something else.
Yeah. So, like, what do we do to deal with multiple stressors? Like, what are our, like, because we like to phrase the episodes as questions, and what is it that we use to deal with this shit? It can be magical, it can be personal, it can be technical. Like, let's get into, like, the technical aspects behind this if we can. Does anyone want to take that one away?
I'll start with one, just because I've said it before on episodes in which we talked about things concerning our well-being, our emotional health and mental well-being, etc. But escapism in moderation is a good thing. LARPing, Dungeons and Dragons, tabletop games, tabletop role-playing. If you're into it, some people are puppy play. If you're into that, they use that for escaping purposes. Escapism in a healthy, controlled manner is a acceptable outlet for pressures. And to let loose and to allow your cathartic sort of working through of difficult feelings and situations. So that's my, yeah.
I was going to say, in, like, a non-shady way, that definitely does seem to be, like, your go-to mechanism for that sort of situation. Like, you usually jump right to escapism, and, like, you've been pretty straight up and honest about that from the get-go, too.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the reason for that is just because, like I said earlier, I don't want to lie to anybody with this episode. I'm not the greatest at dealing with pressure. I don't have much.
Which is actually good, because if we were all good at dealing with pressure, then this would just be like an echo chamber. So I'm sure there's someone else out there that's like, yep, same. Me too, Scott.
So for me, escaping, I mean, now, of course, once again, I'm actually, this is directly for the audience. I am actively seeking professional help who is teaching me how to not do this. So I know I say this every time I bring it up. Please do not copy me verbatim what I do or what I, you know, when I talk about this. But when I escape, it allows for me to kind of be a character or somebody else that allows me to fulfill the things that I just can't fulfill myself. Now, there are people that do it in a really positive way where they'll get this kind of character bleed, if you will, and they'll be able to carry it over into their normal life, and they go about and do the thing that maybe that was giving them pressure in the first place. I unfortunately get stuck in the wishful thinking. You know, it's about making sure you come back and finding a way to use that energy that you built up, because that energy is real. You know, your feelings are real. that energy is something you can wield. And if you have the grit and the willpower to do it, you can bring it over into your real life and go for whatever it is, you know, if whatever's causing you pressure, if it's a goal or whatever, but go for it, because the energy can be a great resource if you know how to tap into it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, and I've, like, definitely used that before, because, like, as y'all know, Scott and I are both fans of Dungeons & Dragons, and,
Me too.
I've said this numerous times. Oh, good to know. I feel like I'm a real-life D&D character. Like, I don't know if you've seen me in real life. Like, I literally have, like, natural anime character hair. Like, my hair naturally, like, flicks at the bangs and flies back. And
yes,
like,
yes, we know.
Shit.
You're a main character. We know. No.
But I find I can be more present with who I am sometimes in a game than I can be in present day life, because I am a big personality and I know it, and I don't really fit into the Muggle world that well. And as I walk down the street, people are like, there goes a fucking witch. Like, I wear it on my sleeve, right? And it gets a little isolating, and being able to find a space where those parts of your personality are just like naturally at home, it can be very cathartic and therapeutic, even if you're not necessarily using it for escapism, because, like, escapism tends to not work for me. My form of escapism is working on something or bettering myself. That's why, like, when I play a game, I'm often, like, interested in games that allow me to develop skills or perspectives or mindsets, or, like, allow me to develop myself as a person, like, my reaction speed or my exploration capabilities or, like, my general sense of danger and situational awareness, right? All those things, like, working on myself, it's literally, like, treating me, a person, like I'm an RPG character, right? That's why I'm so good at a lot of the things I do, because I take the mechanics directly from, like, games and RPGs, and I apply them to my real life. I know that if I want to get good at something, hey, guess what? You have a few things that you're talented at. A few things. Most people generally get like one or two. I was really good with knives. I know that sounds like weird to say, but I was naturally really good with knives when I was a kid. Then you learn from there. I'm naturally like bad at fucking everything I do to begin with, and I know I gotta practice to get better, right? And that helps me deal with the pressure of like people expecting me to be better, you know? Like, I had so much pressure from my dad growing up to, like, be like him and take over the business, even though he never directly told me that's what he wanted me to do. It was very, very clearly implied, even though he denies otherwise. But that's how I learned to deal with it, right? I worked on myself. I leveled up. I treated every experience like it was an encounter that I could pull something away from, and I would rest and I would strengthen myself. And I found myself like using magical thinking to naturally grow in that role. And I was able to eventually just do shit, right? And this is going to naturally tie into like what I was going to say for how I deal with stuff is, I tend to become a robot when I have too much pressure. My main problem is, yeah, I can do stuff. Like Scott was saying, I do have a lot of skills to deal with stuff, and I'm not going to pretend otherwise and like say that I don't, because I'm a fairly skilled individual, and that's because I had to be to survive, right? And my problem is learning to value myself enough to not put so much pressure on me that I crack. Like, I could do any job that I could get interviewed for and they could hire me for. I could learn to do it, honestly. But some will require me to do way more than is fair, way more than I can sustain at a healthy level. And it would require me to stop seeing as many people as I do, to stop having the energy to work on poetry, to stop having the availability to do which is betwixt, you know, like it's a matter of finding something that I know I can put my energy into that isn't going to ask me to give up everything for it. And that's part of the problem is capitalism expects us to be subservient and give up everything that we want just to live accordance to its very fickle whims, you know? And I don't know, you kind of got to make space for yourself and like not let yourself get caught into toxic situations where people demand more of you than you're capable of giving, you know? Like, you got to be very careful because it's a fine line to walk, and every place you go across will try and take as much of you as they can get, you know?
Uh-huh.
There's no real clear solution to it either, right? Like, no, Jake, how much is your job fucking ripping your soul out of you right now and, like, draining every little bit out of you?
It's just, you know, it's not, you know, I felt the same way, I feel the same way eventually at any job that I've had. I've never had a job that was like, yes, I could do this for the next 30 some odd years and retire and that, and I'm good. I've never had a job that gave me that. And part of me used to think that, like, for the longest time, I would think, all right, you haven't found the right job, you know, like you haven't found the right job. Just like, you know, when you come out as gay and they're like, you know, you haven't found the right guy or you haven't found the right girl. Maybe you just haven't found the right job. And I think, like, I am going to be 29 in April, so I'm approaching that nice 30 mark eventually. In another, you know, 2 years, whatever, or another year, basically. So I'm approaching 30, and I think I've just had this revelation that I'm not going to find the right job. I'm going to create the right job.
Yep.
That's wise.
Yeah. I'm going to create the right job. I am going to, and I know a lot of people are like, well, that's the every millennial's dream, you know, work for yourself, no boss, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, it's my dream. Whether I share it with many millennials or not, I don't give a fuck. But it's my dream. It's what I want. I don't care if I'm running 5 different types of, you know, I don't care if it's like, you know, Witches Betwixt makes a little income and, you know, my eulogy writing business makes some income and, you know, maybe I'm doing something else on the side. I don't care if I have like 5 to 6 different like avenues of income generation, but it's all me and it's all mine and it's all my energy. And it's just, and I'm not making anyone else rich. I have no like boss in like giving me stupid policies about dumb bullshit. I have no coworkers
that I don't agree with.
Yeah, you know, like right now my job, there's talks of a merger that's gonna happen. Like we're gonna merge with another Remax brokerage. And this isn't like huge news because I don't work for some like Fortune 500 company. So like this isn't like breaking news. But so the idea is we're going to merge with some company and this and that. And I'm like, well, I don't know what that means for me. Do they make cuts? You know, there's just so much speculation right now. And then that's another stress that I have. And I'm like, well, I really want to hold on to this job for right now because I scheduled a surgery consult for top surgery for April 21st. So,
woo!
Yeah. So I scheduled a surgery consult and I'm like, okay, well, I have sick time. And I like the fact that I have this steady thing right now and I have paid sick time so I can use that sick time to recover. Because usually it's about a week that they say that you need to recover from top surgery. So I'm like, okay, like I have that time. At least I can utilize this job to do the things that I need to do, you know? But now with this merger, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen now. So, you know, it's just like, it's just added stress. But yeah, I mean, the job is just soul sucking, but all jobs are kind of soul sucking to me because I want what I want.
Yep.
And I can't deny that part of me anymore. It's almost like coming out as trans again, you know, like I'm coming out as an entrepreneur. I want my own business. It's like, it's kind of like funny, but
I kind of get what you mean by that though. just because, like, when you come to the realization that you're not, it's once again, it's this queer spirit thing, though, right? I mean, it's this idea that you're not like everyone else, that you see the world slightly differently, that everything is colored in a really different rainbow of colors to you, you know, like, it's just, you don't, and, you know, when you're looking at it from our position, I don't know, you it is really lonely sometimes, but eventually something happens, because I know where you're at, Jay, as far as, like, kind of being honest with yourself and being like, I'm just not the person who is going to, I mean, you didn't say this, but this is me. I don't want to take orders from somebody. I don't want to follow weird company policy that is, like, really horrible. It goes against my morals and, you know, lie to customers or tell them this or, you know, focus on sales. And then 2 months later, it's focus on, you know, this other bullshit, you know, and I'm tired of that. I'm not interested in losing my soul to something that is not designed to make me the best me that I can be, you know? I mean, and granted, of course, you know, never look for your own personal power outside of yourself, you know, you're only ever going to find that inside. But still, I think that, you know, I have my desires, and I think that those desires are sacred. And, you know, I know what I want. And that's just, you know, even if it's one step, you know what I mean, like one tiny little baby step towards it, then that's what I have to do, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I feel that too. And, like, just this idea of, you know, like, company rules and policies and stuff like that. It's like, if I'm, like, selling items or something, you know, suppose that's one of my businesses, you know, I'm selling, I have a witchy online business, right? And, oh, sales are down this month. Okay. I can look into the metrics myself. I can say, okay, well, maybe I'm not advertising as much. Maybe my advertising budget went down, or, you know, maybe I really stopped posting on social media. Like, I really went kind of quiet on social media, and so maybe people just don't know that I exist, or they're just not as interested, or, you know, oh, it's getting, you know, it's after the Christmas season, you know. So, like, I would much rather be in a position where I can look at that raw data myself and say, okay, so this is how I can attempt to fix this, versus a company-wide email goes around and says, sell, 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 gotta keep selling, gotta get those numbers up, blah, 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 because of course it's always sell, 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 it's always go, 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 it's, you know, always coffee is for closers, and, you know, all that bullshit. And it's just, I'm tired of it. I get it, everyone wants to make money because you need money. I get that. You need money. You need money to do things. But I want to get money in a way that makes me feel fulfilled. So yeah, I want to be proud of the money that I make. And I don't want to just, like, look at my, oh yeah, there's my direct deposit. Oh, cool. Oh, did they short me $10 this week or what? You know, I don't want that. I just want something. I always said this to Joyce. So I was like, I have this need to exercise control in all things. I have a need to exercise control in all aspects of my life. So I want to be, you know, the one that I want to make my own money, not just, like, I don't want someone to give me money for work that I've done for them. I just, you know, I want to make my own money. And it's just really important to me. It's just such a core part of who I am and what I want. And a lot of that is very stressful to me because I'm always coming up with new ideas, but I feel trapped in my current situation because I don't know which move to make first. How do you know which move to make first and when? And then there's other expenses that come up, and I need some expenses to, like, get paperwork going to start an LLC. And I just feel like I'm constantly, like, penny pinching, and, you know, it's a struggle, but I manage it. And I'm learning that, and this kind of ties into how I deal with handling multiple pressures, the topic of the entire episode. So basically for me, I have a tendency to snowball, like I said earlier. So for me, it's really important that I have a person or people in my life that can tell me to stop and take a and just stop for a second. Because when people are just like, stop, like it really does. It stops me in my tracks. It stops my train of thought. And I go, okay, why? And then they'll tell me, you know, like, okay, well, you're getting way ahead of yourself. You need to calm down. You know, you need to think of the right, you know, the right now picture. So that's important too. So I like, I guess, for me, I need a support system of some sort. Maybe like, just someone to be like, yo, you need to chill out. And usually those people are like, you know, like relax. Play a video game. Before, when I was younger, I would write or I would like write a lot, you know, about my feelings, kind of vent kind of thing. That doesn't really work for me too much lately. I don't know if that's just a right now thing or that's a forever thing. And reading used to do that too. But I find myself, I'm kind of gravitating toward reading more like nonfiction books. Like I'm reading this book right now called The Broke Millennial, How to Get Your Financial Life Together. And I'm like, I'm not pleasure reading. Like even when I'm reading, I'm still like reading for my own purposes, which necessarily isn't bad, but I need to do more escapism. Actually, I need to remove myself from the reality of things. And I need to just indulge in the fantasy a bit again. And honestly, what is really, really, really helping me is that every Sunday we have a group of friends that come to my house and we play games. It started as a D&D thing. My friend was running the session, and you know, I have the space to host it, so that was cool. And it's nice because they come in around 12 o'clock and they don't leave until like 9-10 o'clock, and that's an entire day that I must be focused on that. I can't do anything else because I'm playing D&D, you know what I mean? Like you're stuck in the game, like you're absorbed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so if there's okay, so the second Trojan horse of the episode is D&D is good and you should play D&D.
D&D is therapy. And I've actually read articles where they use it for that. Yeah.
I was just going to say.
Because it allows you to engage with subject matter that may be hard for you to deal with in real life. And it allows you to have a method in which you can approach it and have safety, whether or not you succeed or fail. And it gives you an outlook of what it might look like to verbally stand up for yourself, to deal with the repercussions of someone threatening physical violence and not being intimidated, you know? It's powerful. And it allows you to engage with dynamics. And like so many people I know write their own personal life traumas into their characters' backstories, right? Like, hey, you got problems with your parents? Hey, your character can too. Hey, you got issues with like being accepted into a group? Play a distant rogue who like kind of shadows the group around and like follows them around and helps them out, but like avoids them. And it takes multiple sessions to like bring them into the fold and like show them that you can trust people. And it's also like a metaphor for you being able to trust people, and like you can heal in the process and hug. And all of a sudden everyone becomes like this big queer chosen family, and you become like a bunch of bisexual kleptomaniacs running around and killing monsters and like taking shit. And like, pretty rad.
A new novel by Sophia.
I mean, it's not by Sophia. That's not by me. That's just by queer people who play fucking D&D in general.
Mm-hmm. And I would just like to point out, when I say D&D, like, we do play D&D, but when I say D&D, I really just mean tabletop games in general, or just, you know, games in general.
When I say D&D, I mean 5e, motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's we have a little bit of a divide in our group. It's you know him, Scott, our friend Rick. Mm-hmm. He hates 5th edition, loves 4th edition. Me, oh, I don't.
Your friend's a fucking. He's observably, in fact, wrong, and I can cite him many game theorist videos.
It's actually
exactly why 4.0 is a flawed system.
It's
but,
actually no, hilarious, no. Sophia, because you are on the autism spectrum, and so is he.
Yeah.
So you each have your own very detailed arguments for why you're both right.
That's what I'm laughing at. That's what literally exactly what I'm laughing at right now.
Think if you and Rick would like were in the same room. The
complexity of it, I understand why yes. that they might like it. However, yeah. 90% of people who play D&D don't like it for intense metagaming rule complexity. And even if you do, 3.5 provides better options for it. So it's perhaps that your friend maybe hasn't even played 3.5, because if you want a metagame and do a whole bunch of broken bullshit and have a whole bunch of rules around combat, I guarantee you letting them fucking loose in goddamn 3.5's broken horse shit will just like be... the cherry on the sundae, you know yeah. what I mean?
I don't know if he's ever played 3.5. I'm sure he's read a lot about it. See, and here was my other thing too. So my other escape is also video games. I've actually kind of been getting back into playing Dauntless, which is a game that I really like. It's like a Monster Hunter kind of game. And I've been enjoying it a lot. It's been fun. It's only been a couple days that I've been playing it, but I'm like, man, I really need this like break in this thing, like just to relax and escape for a little bit. So but I play with him, and he is one of those people. I love him dearly. We've been friends since high school. So and I tell him about this all the time. I'm like, when I play a game and then I haven't played it for a while and then I get back into it, I'm really rusty. Like, I gotta remember all the buttons and what goes where and what armor was I wearing, and you know what I mean? It's like a whole, you gotta like learn the game again, kind of. Him, he can just remember. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's this, it's that, it's boom, it's bing bang boom, you know, this and that, blah blah blah. Oh, why aren't you doing this, why aren't you doing that? And sometimes it really grinds my gears, because I'll be like, dude, like, I haven't played in fucking forever, like, you're making it feel like work. Give me a minute to catch up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just because
But mm-hmm. I understand that. I will forget certain things, but I understand that too. Like, if it's a game that stands out in my memory, like, there's certain bits that I can just catalog and immediately remember for yeah. like a near indefinite period of time. And it's absurd. And I'll be like, oh yeah, watch out for the enemy third from the left on the whatever, because they have this item. Like, how do you know that? And it's like, don't even ask. I can't tell
yeah,
you.
It
how
must,
do I have my deal with people? I don't know. How do you deal with enemies in a video game? Well, let me tell you a very intricate system how.
Exactly. And I feel like, and then me and Joyce are a little different. We're like, all right, so go up to the guy, smack the guy, get the fire armor, do the thing. You know, we take a much more, I guess, maybe like relaxed approach. He's very tactical. So, I don't know. I'd swear, Sophia, like if you ever come visit down this way, I would hate and love for the two of you to meet.
I'd pay good money.
What's your friend?
I'd pay so much money.
Because you're almost like the same person in a lot of ways.
If Bernie wins, I will come down. But okay. If he doesn't, fuck your whole country.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, honestly, if Bernie doesn't win, we might be moving to Canada, so I hope you got a spot.
I mean, I don't have a spot, but I
can find collectively resources.
Get you some stuff.
Okay. A couch to surf on for a bit. I think the whole world would fucking end if you and Rick met. That would be hilarious. Maybe, I don't know. I guess it must be like an autism spectrum-y kind of thing to just like remember all these intricate details of things instantly.
Okay, look, I was talking about it with my friend, and it's basically like this. Your memory can be near perfect for certain things, selective for other things, and then completely vacant for others. And you have no fucking control over what or how much you get and where. Okay?
Yeah. And there's no filter.
Yeah. So like for me, I have extremely good visual memory, and I can visualize stuff in 3D and color and rotate it and observe and like do a whole bunch of really complex shit that allows me to like, if I walk by, say, a store once and I know its location, I'll never forget where it is, and I can always find it again by foot, sort of thing.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. That's impressive. Trojan horse.
So I don't. I also don't forget people's faces. There's a couple stipulations on that. If I interact with someone past a certain point, and I learn to know who they are, and I develop a memory association for them, I will never ever forget what their face looks like, and I will always be able to visualize what I last remembered them looking like. certain people, like my girlfriends, all of my partners, I remember what they were wearing on the day I met them, and I could describe each of their outfits to you right now if you were to ask me.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot to deal with. No, it's
I would imagine. So I mean, coming from me,
imagine what it's like to never be able to forget stuff.
Right. I guess there's really two perspectives on it. Like coming from me, I'm like, wow, that's impressive, because sometimes I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. You're like, I'm drowning.
I have too much information.
Apparently my escapism is infectious and has infected the podcast.
it has empathically
leaked.
We were talking about that before we started recording, because you were saying, Scott, there you've been like binge watching anime, and I'm like, yeah, I started like having Yu-Gi-Oh on in the background at work on my phone.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, no,
but actually I need to embrace your infectious escapism, because I need more of that, actually, because right now, like, kind of how I'm dealing with my pressures is like, I kind of just put one down and pick up another, you know, I stop focusing on one thing, and then I'm like, okay, well, this thing's aggravating me, so I'm gonna like focus on this thing, but I wasn't really leaving enough time for me, and so you know, I need to stop putting down the financial books, and I need to, you know, just start playing a goddamn video game, and, you know, not feeling like I need to, and also like for books and stuff, you know, like read more of, I have so many fantasy books and like Star Wars books and like, you know, really just escapist kind of material, and I need to get back into that. It's my character flaw, and I say it all the time. I'm like, I live in a constant state of just like anxiety, and which makes my brain guilt me into not having fun, and it's something that I need to keep working on.
I always thought this about you, Jay. You always reminded me of the pentacle suit of the tarot. You are all the worldly and have a very difficult time with the air and water stuffs, but you're pretty darn good with the earth and some of the fire stuffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's an astrological sign. If I'm not mistaken, you're a Taurus, right?
No, I'm an Aries.
Aries. Okay, that was the other one I thought.
But my moon sign is Taurus.
Right. That was what I was trying to remember. I'm like, I remember both Taurus and Aries, and I don't know why. I can't.
Joyce is a Taurus.
It's like, it's because it's both.
Yeah, Joyce's sun sign is Taurus, which I think like it really helps balance me out, because I'll be like, go, 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 go. And Joyce, for the most part, will keep up. You know, like, okay, we'll do the thing. We'll do this thing. We'll do that thing. And then after a while, they're like, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch a fucking movie. And you're gonna like it, and I'm like, okay.
I'm gonna start calling you Sonic the Hedgehog, because you gotta go fast.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I do want to see that movie.
It's fucking bad.
Oh, I expect it to be bad, and that's why I want to see it.
It's like the cheesiest of cheese ham on ham sandwich. It's like if you took a ham sandwich and cheese, like a whole block of cheese, you just melted the cheese on the ham sandwich, and then you threw it at the wall, and then like sprayed like foam cheese at it or whatever that stuff is, and then
super cheesy,
and then you wrote like Sonic the Hedgehog, and that was the
But yeah, that's kind of my very long spiel on I need to do more escapism is healthy in moderation.
In a healthy way, I would say. Like,
I think me and Scott were like the polar opposite. Like, Scott, you do too much and I don't do enough.
I'm in the middle of you two most of the time.
Yeah, you're kind of in the middle, yeah. What were you saying, Scott?
I mean, what I was just trying to get at is that, once again, I just need a healthier relationship with it. Like, because even when I'm doing good, I love D&D, right? Like, I love watching anime. I love, like, you know, I love escapism in general, and I probably always will. The same way, like, I love food, but I don't have the healthiest relationship with food. You know, like, it's just about forming boundaries with the things that I like and learning to use them instead of to my detriment, learning to use them to my betterment. You know what I'm saying? That's what I was basically trying to get at.
That makes sense. And I feel like, you know, all of us in some way, and you know, we have things that we probably indulge too much in.
Oh, absolutely, everyone has vices.
Yeah, everyone has their vice. Like I, like one of my vices is soda. Diet, by the way, because I am diabetic. But just I love sweet, bubbly drinks, and I shouldn't drink it, but I can't stop.
It's if I could, so if I had an endless supply of weed, I'd be smoking a half ounce about every 4 days to a week, depending.
Speaking of that, actually, I don't know. This was the other thing that I have been doing. I have been using that more, really on a consistent and daily basis. And I can say that I have noticed a difference in my anxiety levels, even when even when I'm not actively like smoking it or vaping it or, you know, whatever method of delivery, just I feel like overall I'm calmer. Like if situations come up at work, I'm like, okay, like I feel like I can, like today I was able to like walk through, like get through it a little bit more methodically and calmly than I could.
That's probably because the way you're using it, it's giving it time to restore your neural pathways, and it's helping to restore all of the kind of almost sort of reboot the things that aren't working right, and it's helping you to find a better, happier, healthier coping mechanisms, which is what weed does. It restores the neural pathways in the
brain. I can definitely say you know, if you're a person that, you know, doesn't have a negative reaction to that substance, you know, I mean, it's been proven in a lot of things to be helpful. So I wouldn't write it out.
And I know it's very controversial to talk about hallucinogenics, but let's be fucking honest. They're the next thing that's on the ballot to get legalized. Like, look at what...
Are they really?
Oh, yeah. Like, people are talking about legalizing psychedelics next because they're not that harmful. They don't really pose a serious risk. The real danger of psychedelics is not treating them with the respect they deserve, which is kind of par for the course when you have it as a Schedule I legal drug, right? If you have people who are intimately aware of the risks, who can use it in a safe environment, almost all the threats are mitigated. There's almost no negativity to it. In fact, when you start looking at like the neural scans of what happens on people who are on psilocybin or LSD, what it does is it opens up like chatter between different hemispheres of the brain that either used to communicate but no longer do due to a trauma response, or it just opens up cross chatter in general. So it allows people who normally have a very segregated mind and very formulaic way of thinking to literally break out of that by changing how your brain works for that duration and allowing different cross chatter to occur. And if you do enough, it allows neural pathways to develop that allows people a wider use of their mind. And that's why like a lot of people have been experimenting with microdosing LSD, and it's theorized by a lot of people, not scientists per se, just like the people who do it, that if hallucinogenics weren't such an illegal drug, they would be given at lower targeted doses as literal drugs for treating certain mental health stuff, just the same like we do with like ADHD medication. But it's a stigma around it because it can be used to get high, and you know how the war on drugs treats stuff, right? So we're taking substances that aren't necessarily really that bad and just stigmatizing them because of the name and the history and what they represent to the establishment, which is something that has the potential to open people's minds up and educate them and have them step outside of their own perspectives, which is naturally a threat to any capitalistic system, right?
I know. I only have, like, as far as, like, my knowledge is only to, like, green hallucinogens, so, like, single plant-based or mixed plant-based, you know, hallucinogenic ointments and things like that. So, like, things like fly agaric, magic mushroom. One of the most... So I can't speak for things like acid or any of those, AE or whatever, but I can speak for green hallucinogens in that
They do know that to be true for them. So I know, like, for instance, when it comes to what we call magic mushroom, although I unfortunately don't remember its you know, its name or even its native spiritual name, but we found that the magic mushroom has the same exact effect on mentally ill brains as when we do electroshock, but we still do electroshock, but it's not like what it once was, right? It's now like directly to the brain. It's very low voltage, and what it does is we've now made it to where it can kind of reset the brain. Now, of course, mental illness will come back with it, but we're finding that, believe it or not, the magic mushroom has a longer lasting with less side effect in the long run. So that's something really interesting.
So I can talk to that. Yeah.
Mushrooms have a very, very positive use, and because they're a little less stigmatized than LSD, it's more common to see them being studied. Yeah, that's really good. Also, do you want to know what LSD is actually made from? Because there's a lot of myths out there. Let's just dispel a few. What do y'all think LSD is made from? Just right now, just throw it out.
I honestly have no idea.
I don't either.
Yeah. What do you think the societal conception is then? That it's like this synthetic chemical
it's some cocktail of chemicals.
LSD is made by creating a fungus on seeds of rye or morning glory. That's it. It's just a fungus. And a lot of people want to treat it like it's this really crazy, hardcore compound, you know, that like some mad scientist cooked up, because that's part of the scare tactics of the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. It's literally a fungus that grows on seeds. It's a naturally occurring substance. Like, I'm sure there's like some synthesizing work you have to do to like reduce it into like an ingestible format. But it's not some crazy designer drug molecule thing that's like made in some shady back alley. It's not.
That's right. Something that I honestly never knew.
I didn't either. I learned that.
Just a little disclaimer. I know some of the things we've talked about are legal and illegal in different places and stuff. Just use them responsibly if you do. We're source them responsibly. Don't be a dumbass.
Know your local laws, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We're not condoning you doing anything illegal. We're having a discussion about the matter of fact of certain things that exist. And if you do them, that's your choice as an individual. And neither condemn or condone. It's your life and Godspeed, whatever you choose to do, bud.
Exactly. I kind of feel... What's up?
Real quick, I just wanted to give some magical options real quick to the audience. I want to say magical stuff that you can do for alleviating pressure. You can do cut and clear, which honestly you could just use a lemon. The spirit of lemon is really good for aiding in removing obstacles. But you can use citrus. I find you can use patchouli. That's pretty good. You could look up like cut and clear. You'll come to root work and conjure, southern root work and conjure, which is where we get that working from.
Amy Blackthorn, her company Blackthorn Hoodoo Blends, there's a lemon tea that she has that is designed for that. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Also, like, cut and clear and removing emotional ties to past situations and stuff, they can kind of be sort of hand in hand. But so doing like cord cutting and stuff like that. That's also pretty useful for removing pressure. And the last thing, this is something that I did when I was really, really suffering growing up. I mean, like, I had what are called subdermal hives from all my anxiety, which are just big red splotches all over my body. I was really bad. And what I did was, something that helped was, as simple as it is, I just wrote down the really horrible things, and I set a safe fire, and I would throw them into the flame, and I would say something, I'm trying to remember, something like, with all the sorrow and the pain, I now commit them to the flame. And I would do this frequently, And it became very cathartic. It may not, you know, it may not have anything for you right away. Like, you may still feel a little sad, but I kept at it. And it slowly kind of began to help help me to keep afloat a little bit better.
I like that.
Yeah. So that's a little spell for you guys.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I have a few things I'd like to just throw out there on the magic end as well. There's a little charm that I came up with for a friend that I'd like to tell everybody about. It's very simple that you can do just to, like, absorb negativity. It's black salt and tea tree oil. It's real easy. The hardest part's honestly going to be getting your hands on black salt, because, like, I think I was reading someone saying that, like, traditional black salt's made from, like, volcanic activity, if I'm not mistaken. And go ahead.
I believe it or not, like, in the old folk magic, the way to make black salt is to get the soot from the base of a cauldron. But
yeah,
you can make it a thousand different ways.
That's one way. But what I heard was that there's actually, like, a black salt thing naturally occurring in nature around volcanic areas, where there's a food grade safe black salt that you can get.
Right, but I know what you're... okay, so you mean, like, particular, you want the volcanic black salt.
Well, I was just saying that's one type of black salt exists. Mm-hmm. I was acknowledging that that's, like, one type of black salt that exists, but that most black salt is what Scott is talking about, which is manufactured, so... I can't remember what you had said, but you are spot on it. And there's other methods I've heard too, where people say, like, take charcoal from, like, a sacred fire if you have any, like, fires
I like that one too.
Been, what is it, like, blessed or ordained or that you work with, or say you have a ritual space where you and your coven do stuff generally, taking the ash from that and the cinders and mixing it up with salt and alcohol. And why you do it with alcohol is because it's if you do pure isopropyl, this isn't going to be food safe, so don't be eating this, but the isopropyl will evaporate and then it should recondense back down into a mixture of ash and salt that you then can use as black salt. I've also heard of methods that where people use what was it? They mix in some filings from a horseshoe was one method I'd heard of as well. And I don't know where that one comes from, but I heard someone mention that when we were talking about black salt one time. And you take that and mix it with tea tree oil. And, like, black salt, what I use it for is the color black to me has absorptive qualities, so it draws energy in and draws energy out of stuff. So I use it to, like, draw away curses or draw away a spell I no longer want, stuff like that. And if you mix it with tea tree oil, if you naturally use tea tree oil, it's an antibacterial. I think it's antimicrobial as well, but I'd have to Google that. And it's a disinfectant, essentially. So if you were to apply it to, say, a zit that you're getting or an infection, it'll help deal with it. It'll help draw infections out. And it naturally pairs with the theme of what black salt does with energy. So you mix them together in a small jar, and they actually, it's really cool because the black salt will, like, dissolve into it, and then depending on what type of negativity you're filtering out, you can add other items, like maybe if you're, I don't know how sulfur reacts, so be careful with it. Look up your chemistry. Don't just mix substances without knowing, because noxious fumes can kill you. But you could use sulfur if it's okay to mix in. I mixed in rust because I knew it wouldn't react, like rust from one of my ritual blades, so that it could, like, mitigate any interference that my friend was having from, like, spirits messing with her. And
you can also do some...
Go ahead.
Because you said sulfur, but if you wanted to substitute sulfur, you can use asafoetida, also known as devil's dung, which is onion. It's an onion that it, yeah.
Good to know. Okay. And I know that tea tree oil is fucking expensive, so you can dilute it down. You don't have to use it with just straight up tea tree oil, depending on the size of the charm. A good thing to cut it with is either, like, melted snow water or, like, moon water or any type of stuff that's been consecrated in any regard. I have water from a crossroads, which is, like, from my hometown, which is, like, has a big theme around being, like, the Grand Forks and, like, where crossroads meet, and it's like where literally two rivers fork together. So I use that as consecrated water to like mix it in for clarity, you know. But yeah, it's a real simple charm, and then just like seal it in a bottle with wax and leave it somewhere where it's not going to break, because if it breaks, you really don't want all that energy getting released in one spot. But it's a good way to like soak up negativity, and if you like feel like you're getting overwhelmed, you can like hold on to it and focus on it and like put your energy into it.
Mm-hmm. I like that one a lot.
Yeah,
I do like that one too. That's really nice. Are there any other magical things that you guys wanted to kind of
recommend? I think I said everything that I could think of off the top of my head.
Okay. I think we can kind of summarize the discussion then.
I could jump to a couple more remedial things. Never underestimate the beneficiary effects of drinking a little bit of herbal tea that you mix yourself with intent. Look up the associations of the herbs beforehand. Try and support maybe like a local health food store or apothecary. Although apothecaries tend to be a little bit more expensive sometimes. And yeah, mix your own teas. My voice is getting croaky.
Take walks in nature barefoot if it's safe. You know, make sure you're not stepping on anything, but yeah.
I don't go barefoot personally, but that's just me. What was I gonna say? Yeah, and like having nice baths to relax in. Like, I know I'm that bitch who's always like, take a bath, take a magical bath, but it's great. It's wonderful. I love it.
Magical baths are great.
It's a really good way to like take the pressure off, you know. And it's kind of like remedial.
Also, just general smoke cleansing. I like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of just my go-to because it's simple to do and it's like really easy accessible for me. And you can kind of like smoke cleanse in any room that you're in. You know, you just, whether it's like Palo Santo or sage or, you know, whatever it is that you're kind of smoke cleansing.
Be careful with like, one, cultural appropriation, and two, be careful with Palo Santo because like, most of it now is being illegally harvested in the Amazon, and it's a leading cause of deforestation, and it's just not worth doing it. So if you want like some good non-appropriative alternatives, you can burn cedar. It's fucking wonderful smelling. Non-appropriative or like juniper branches. Lavender as well. You wouldn't think it, but lavender buds make an incredible incense when burned on embers or charcoal pellets. And it also works to serve as like a calming, cleansing sort of smoke as well.
I also happen to know from personal experience, many of you witches are into like aesthetic-y stuff that looks really cool and also really works really well. Blackberry branches tied with red twine create something called the witch's whisk. It's a traditional craft tool. Blackberry was used traditionally in the British Isle by cunning folk, traditional witches to, whisk up and remove negative energy and disease demons and stuff like that. So you can use that too, with the thorns on in particular. I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. It was a little different, I think, but I think it was important and pertinent.
I think this is kind of the direction that we're more moving in, though. We're starting to talk about, like, heavier subjects and, like, branching out. And I think that we're kind of doing well with it, and we're hitting our stride, and it's been a good season so far.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been really enjoying it. So we are going to wrap it up here, though. You can follow us on all of the big three social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our handle is Witches Betwixt, all one word, on all three platforms. We welcome messages on all three platforms, and we all check each one except for Twitter, which is pretty much exclusively run by me. If you want to add your post to our online community, you can use the hashtag WBTWXT. So it's basically like Witches Betwixt with like all the vowels taken out of it. And the links to our official Facebook group, which is pretty cool. The links to our official Facebook group and website are they're in the show notes and the description part of all of our episodes. So yeah, I think we're gonna wrap it up here, and we will see you all in the next episode.
Bye, everybody.
We love you. Don't forget to banish.